July 9, 2021. It's a Watt for Pedro show.
what you are. That's how it goes now. Lift up your head more and fall apart. You're not the sun, cast in the shadow.
For Pedro Show, happy Friday. John Coltrane started with A Lover, then Be in Flower with You're Not Sun. We're not. Well, I'm not totally man alone because of those Skype engineers in Estonia with their invention for connecting people. I got Dana Schechter from Bend, Oregon. Welcome aboard.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And we got to thank right away Andrea Belfi.
Woo!
Because, he's lived in Berlin now a bunch of years, but that's how also where you live. I guess you're well, let's learn about your journey in music. Dana, please bring the earliest musical memory you have.
I have to say the earliest one that I really remember is being a little kid and my mom singing the Beatles song Blackbird to me at night to go to bed. We have listened to a lot of that kind of era of music in the household, and I guess I had trouble sleeping, so she would sing that song to me.
It's like learning how to fly and shit, like waking up. No, Paul McCartney, right?
Yeah.
So in this pad, was there musical instruments?
Yeah, actually, there was a lot of sound and music. My mom played flute, which was what sort of led me to play flute when I was around 9. Also, my stepfather is a sound designer and worked in film, and he recorded bands and stuff as well. So, yeah, there was a lot of art and music in my
household. So there was a flute. Did you jump on your ma's flute?
I think actually I maybe fiddled around with it a bit, and she said, okay, you know, let's get you one. And that lasted only a couple years for me.
Now, can I ask you about school? You know, in those, you know, grade school and shit, were you in junior high, marching band or the choir or shit like that?
No, so flute at 9, and then when I guess, how old are you, when you're like 11 or 12, I guess you're in 6th grade. So in 6th grade, I started playing upright bass in school, and I was really short. I had to stand on a box, and but that was my beginning of bass. And then
How'd that happen?
I don't know. I just thought it was cool, because, I mean, come on.
But it was your choice. No, well, sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
Look,
yeah,
I got to tell you, cool. Dana, the reason I'm on bass is because of D. Boone's ma. I mean, that's why I like people talking about their journeys through music, because there's millions of trippy ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
so
I know
you picked it
that.
Yourself.
Yeah.
You picked it yourself. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Because I can imagine for a little kid, like bass. For me, a stand-up bass looked like a giant violin without a chin part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's huge. I mean, for an 11-year-old, it's a pretty absurd choice. But I loved it, and I learned how to play with a bow. And
Marco.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, a lot of those bebop guys, you know, like Paul Chambers and shit, they were bad on fucking Arco. Jimmy Garrison.
Yeah.
And okay, talk about Arco. French or German?
Me?
Well, there's a technique, right? Over the hand or under the hand.
Oh, gosh. I mean, I think at 11, they were like, just try to hold that thing steady.
Okay.
Try to make it not wobble. Don't drop it.
Now, this was probably like the concert band. This was in the marching band or shit. So,
yeah, well, this was in San Francisco, so we didn't have anything like marching band. Or if we did, I was totally unaware of it. I mean, it's like the middle of the city.
You would have been on sousaphone or the bone. That's a marching band bass clef stuff. So right. What about the back to your pad? What about the first record you bought with your own money?
Well, I was thinking about this, and I think it's a toss-up because, honestly, I don't remember if my mom bought it for me or if I bought it. But I know that my first two records were My Sharona by The Knack, a 7-inch, which I was super psyched for and then promptly sat on and broke and was really bummed out. And then LP was the Saturday Night Fever film soundtrack.
Bee Gees. See, I ask about your own money because when you're a kid, you ain't got a lot of money. So I'm curious on, you know, how it goes like that. And what about the first gig you saw?
Well, the first gig that I got to say, my memory of youth is pretty spotty.
That's okay.
But
it's a Watt from Pedro show. There's no hard questions. There's no wrong answers.
Well, I'll tell you, the first real show that I saw, according to my spotty memory, was Rush. Moving Pictures tour in 1982, I guess. I was just a little squirt, and I went with my sister. And amazingly, her mom let us go to the Cow Palace in San Francisco, which is
a
huge arena, you know?
It's by the airport. It's where Keith Moon passed out. Some cat in the crowd took over on drums to save the
right.
gig. Now, I saw Rush twice, about 35 years apart, and I conked out at both gigs because it was so... You know, if you play in trios, they always ask you about Rush, but no one asks you about Cream or Jimi Hendrix.
Right.
Well, Jimmy put it together his experience after seeing Cream, but they always ask you about Rush. Or I guess if you're a little new wave, the Police.
Right. Oh, gosh. I mean, I was such, like, the classic, you know, 12-year-old. Like, I started going to shows when I was 12, and that was really the beginning of the whole thing. But I was totally into classic rock, and I was also into stuff like the Buzzcocks and the B-52s and the Germs. But I really kind of turned into this hard rock kid, like Van Halen and Scorpions, Judas Priest, Motorhead. We saw all those bands before 1984, which was amazing now to think about, you know, how much.
I saw Judas Priest's first gig. It was at the Whiskey.
Can
you imagine? Your opening band was Gary Valentine and the trio called. He had a little new wave trio, and it was, now sometimes you'd have the weird kind of mixture of things, but Mr. Halford's voice, oh my God.
Incredible.
It was, what was the, maybe you remember this record, because I only had one by them, Sad Wings of Destiny.
Yeah.
And there was a song called The Ripper.
Yeah, that's the song.
Okay.
That
yeah.
song's incredible. That's the best. But
and then they did a Joan Baez, I think the next record, my buddy Tony got it, and they did a Joan Baez. Diamonds and Rust or some Green Malagasy. Yeah, they were doing some covers. Yeah. But, I mean, that guy's voice, Jesus.
Yeah.
Wow. Totally. Okay, so you got some training in the arena rock. Okay. So a couple of years of flute, a couple of years. I know you end up a stand-up, electric bassist. So when was the change over from the stand-up to the electric?
Well, I started playing when I was 16, and I started playing out of the memory of a friend who had passed, and that friend was Cliff Burton from Metallica.
Ah, good bass man.
Amazing, yeah. So after
Robert, too. I like Robert, too, and then the guy that... I had to quit.
So Cliff was going to give me lessons. He was a friend.
Oh, you knew this guy?
Oh, yeah, okay, for sure. Okay. So around, I mean, because this was the Bay Area.
The bus squished him, and in Europe, right?
Yes.
Fuck. Well,
yeah,
I'm driving,
sure, yeah.
Be careful driving. Or even if you're not the driver, make sure that guy's careful. It slid on ice or something, right?
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
There's guys like him, and who's the other guy? It's an England band. Steve Harris. I'm not so much into the songs and stuff, but he kind of runs the band. Yeah, you wouldn't think hard rock is strong with the bass, but it can be.
Oh, yeah. Steve Harris is an incredible bass player. That guy was definitely... Him and Lemmy were my sort of...
Well, before that, I was going to say Geezer Butler. He even wrote the words, right?
That guy was, yeah, I mean, must we even say it?
I bet you Cliff had some good things to say about Geezer.
Oh, that was his God.
And you know Geezer, who's he talk about, right? Jack Bruce. Because I'll tell you, Cream, yeah, see how it all goes around. Tell me about the first gig you did. Oh, no, first tell me your first electric bass.
The first show I played?
No, the first electric bass that you got.
Oh, the first bass that I had was a Rickenbacker.
Oh, like Cliff Burton.
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing is that I started playing bass out of Cliff's memory because we were pals. You know, my sister and I grew up in the Bay Area thrash metal scene in the 80s. So all those folks were our friends and our community. You know, we really had this very strong community of friends, and then of course, you know, Metallica blew up, and when Cliff was alive, you know, we used to hang out and drive around in his car and listen to the Misfits and listen to Sabbath and listen to all this stuff. And
there's a bass player, Jerry, right? He was playing E and A, like it was like a two string, but he had two, because when you broke one of the strings, you could just move over.
Move up five. Yeah. So Cliff was going to give me bass lessons, and he was always like, I know you played it when you were 12, you know, you should get back into it. And I was like, give me lessons, Cliff. And he said, get a bass. And I said, hey, give me lessons, get a bass. So that went around and around. And I didn't get a bass. So, you know, when he died, I was like, I'm getting that bass.
That
same week, I went out and I got a bass. And the first bass I ever bought is a 70s Fender Music Master 3/4 scale, which is still the bass that I play today.
Yeah, I know Music
the one
Masters.
I take on tour, and I love it.
I saw pictures. It's kind of modified. It's got a different pickup.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I'm a little biased. I'm almost going to use prejudice word, but a little bass centric. So that's why I talk about this stuff. The other one's the Stang. The Mustang, that Fender bass.
The Mustang.
They got really narrow nuts.
The cheap version.
Yeah, I kind of checked them out because for gigs I had to move to a smaller one in the late 90s because my hands started to hurt. I record with big ones, though. I want to play something from you sent me, another Bee and Flower.
speak of sparks dispels a dull space. As disappearing species spell contrary traits, be fooled not by foul foppery flailing in your face. Gobble not that carrot dangling like a poison bait. As whore shoes, sing luck since bulky nags buck. Steely hot feet plant hard against your mother's back. Jacking whack cracks against gravity's lack, so ether donuts remain there uneaten. Shivering electrons into usefulness even, as duncely dire ignorami ape part of their plan. Into vacuums vaguely go softened minds, man. A terrible torque disinteresting shared icy dreams, until holy spirits bridge reality with seepy screams. Unkindly dismantling of vibed veil mentality, landing thwarts away from the last 3D day, where feigned vaporous sentience blossoms afresh. So undrained, scared brains allay any sense unspent. No trails fall behind, shocking a granite etched. Weepers and the beloved wonder where we went. Angered, electric ink watches to collate and sketch. Thus unto society's song now collectively kept. Given unto the pall, hoped the spawn then to seep, as heard from above and beyond the keep, having departed from this pulsing pond once, and forever eyes look back upon the swirling sound of burning minds scant micrometers away, from the never-ending gift that's charging around, pricking only tuned ears of fine hairs into a gray gaze, crackling that wonder into a bustling phrase like, who's to prove the illusion from which none shall arouse? Ah, snore, that's so off-core, on we is barely a bore. As stillborn zombies gnaw upon their sores, never to burden the righteous who know only their reward, that rise daily, defying gravity and sailing upon those ghosts, of rise scales unweighed by roughened travails, whooping aloud under hanging oceans until that black mountain loads tone against any purpose. Yet red mercury is gold pulled, as does garlic repel, shit shovels of hot dirt up the nose all crave so well, to beg over and again for mouthfuls of cicadas, up to one's elbows in putrefying worms, or imagine instead the gift given by the divine, that lightning sprays willfully from sluice to steps, never a mewling baby but creative men who duly accept that burgeoning mind play, keys open the maze, unwinds the mystery with preternatural ease, elating those waiting at the end of their praise, for hearing unchained thunder at dawn is the only glee. Tickling ivory light spilling crepuscular from the clouds, dapples food dances from one dirt folded within. Bounty from the ground, from the moistest majesty. Hear ye, them drip drops, friends, smelled on the cool breeze, are all special, lit from within. Forget your meat suit, that soul seeks eternity by eschewing ugly sin. And even fall alit by kneeling on our crystalline shins. Breathe, inhale a cool pause, unroll that angry brow, because the madness there hems that snit fury in. Falling from the vault, swirling about without a doubt, the water, electricity, and air are all free. So should we all forever and eternal be, to go, make, play, and breathe.
Watt for Pedro show. Started off that chunk of music with, Wounded Walking, Bee and Flower. Chris Kroeger after that, with his poem, The Oily Half of a Devil Abhors Magnetism. Victoria Shen after that with Zero Player Piano, Collins' Game of Life. And then System 20 from the Rabidon project called Parallel Systems. This has got me, along with Annie Cordes, Michael Kaiser, John Schlesinger, Thomas Lale, Patrick Wecklar, and Eric Hardiman. Now, you know, you send in the things, you play with these guys, but not in the same pad. So I never met any of them. But I'm honored to be part of it. Bombus Brandon after that, Something I Betrayed For, Without the Things You Need Most from Bob Bucko Jr., Dubuque, Iowa. Sam Locke Ward from nearby Iowa City, Jerk Party. And finally, Era Brought the Coming. Okay, so can you remember the first gig you did with your electric bass?
I do. I was 17, and I played at the Haight Street Fair in San Francisco, which was an outdoor, you know, street fair. And we had to play at like 10 in the morning. The band was called the Mud Puppies, which was kind of like a rock and roll band, and I was the bass player. And we played at like 10 in the morning, and that Haight Street Fair was not getting going at 10 in the morning. So it was basically like homeless guys and some, you know, street folks checking us out, and they had their dogs and their cats, and they were just sitting on the sidewalk, and our parents were there. It was great, though. I was really proud. I was like, look at me, I'm on stage.
So you're saying it was a success.
Well, yeah, I mean.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't throw shit. They didn't steal your, take away your, you know, Pedro, if a guy knew Black Dog better than you, he could take your thing, you know, the kegger in the backyard, and then, like, embarrass you in front of everybody. That was the 70s rock and roll etiquette in Pedro, so fuck that. George would never give up his drumsticks. Fuck you.
No way.
Yeah, no way, Jose. So, anyway, what happened with Mud Puppies? Did you get to record with them?
There was an album that came out. I actually don't own a copy of it, but I can get one. We were really sort of a local band, didn't really do a whole lot outside of, you know, the Bay Area. And I think from there, I kind of got into different stuff.
Well, was that record you did with Mud Puppies your first recording?
I guess it was, yeah.
Okay, so yeah. It's fundamental. It's important.
It was, and the guys in the band were really great musicians and great friends and remain friends to this day. And we did a cover of Highway Star, and our organ player Chris could just nail that solo. And I remember being like, damn. And from there, I just sort of
John Lord, right? Deep Purple.
Yeah. Everyone was. That was the high point of the show for sure.
Yeah. Songs about cars. I think I was reading somewhere, because that bass man, Roger Glover, he wrote a lot of the words and songs, too. And I think the song was written on a dare. Can you write a song, like, on the tour bus right now? And they just came up with that shit. And end up one of their big things, right?
And wow.
It's trippy about that. But from Mud Puppies, where do you go?
So, I think after that, I kind of got into working, honestly, and I was working for Rough Trade Records in San Francisco in the warehouse there, and that's where I was exposed to a whole new kind of music that I had really not had any access to, because, you know, growing up around metal and rock music. And when I started working at Rough Trade Warehouse down on 6th Street there, that's where I got exposed to, like, noise rock and experimental and punk, and that's where I first heard bands like
Ruth Schwartz. Was she was that
she was that? Yeah.
Then she made More Damn after that, you know. Watts memory is blurry.
Exactly. Exactly. More Damn and Alternative Tentacles were
right
a block away.
So what you're saying is you don't know about this stuff unless somebody turns you on, especially with the underground, right?
Yeah, I mean, the stuff, it's not even that it was underground, it's just that I had never.
Well, as far as you're concerned, it's underground to you. In fact, there was a band up, do you remember a band up in the city in those days called Black Humor?
I remember that they played because I used to go to the MAB to see punk shows or the on Broadway.
Well, they had this one song with the chorus, some lady screaming, "The only thing new is you finding out about it." And they would take record covers from soul singers out of the thrift store and then just paint their own name on it. Fucked up. But, I mean, it's a mind blow when all you know is arena rock. I was, you know, me and D. Boone's first gig was T-Rex. I'm kind of in the same boat as you.
Because
then you discover this other world and, like, it's whatever you want it to be.
Yeah, it was really exciting. Like, that's where I discovered Scratch Acid, and I was like, holy shit, and Swans, and
David
Casper Brotzman, you know, and, like, Paraubu, Fall Smiths, all that stuff. And some of it I liked more than others, but, like, I had no experience with British music like Smiths and The Fall. Like, how would I have ever, I've just never came across that, and I was, like, that all sort of kind of came in, and, so the next band I had was definitely, I think, you know,
you're saying there were echoes of that. You mean you started a band?
I started a band called Gift Horse.
Oh, yeah, you gave me a track. Now, I didn't know the chronology, so we're going to hear that later in the show, like the third hour. So I got to kind of half-ass backwards. Okay, so Gift Horse, you start.
Yeah, in 91, me and the drummer started it, Jeff Whitehead, and we started that band in my bedroom. I lived in the Lower Haight in San Francisco, and we got this idea, like, well, we'll just start playing in my bedroom, which, like, what, in the middle of San Francisco? But we started this band, and then the upstairs neighbor was this guitar player named Doug Hilsinger, and he played in this band called Bomb. I don't know if you ever saw Bomb, but they were sort of a SF fixture. And we were like, man, we want that guy to play guitar with us. He's so good. And then he came down. He's like, hey, you guys sound pretty good. So we just started playing. And Gift Horse kind of blew up in San Francisco, but none of us had any idea about, like, what to do. Like, hey, let's find a label. Let's go on tour. None of that stuff happened. And it just kind of very sadly didn't go anywhere. But I think it could have if we had... You know,
I still like the idea that you were involved with the band being created. It wasn't like the Mud Puppies where you just joined.
Precisely.
So it was, I think, important in your journey. We're at the end of the first hour, July 9, 2021 edition, Watt from Pedro Show. Hold tight for hour two. July 9, 2021. It's the second hour of Watt from Pedro Show.
To a star, there's a rose.
Walk for Pedro show. Start off the second hour. Tectonic from Insect Art. And if you're playing rock and roll in the city, Tectonic, because I think it's the Tectonic plates. I mean, it gets shaken down here, too. 400-mile parallel universe, right? Rim of Fire. Yeah. And then we had Ben Salter featuring T. Wilds with If I Could, Swing Low, Sweet Dracula from Lucas Sabella. Swans. Okay. Michael's from up the hill. There's a hill up from Pedro and his family. It's called Palos Verdes. They disowned him or some shit, but he's from there, so there's kind of a little bit of Pedro connect. And I saw, I think it was called the Cripple IDs or Strict IDs. Or he had a band that played the Second Mass before he went to New York City. So, but, yeah. No, we got this was some new things. But we got to continue on with this. You told me Gift Horse kind of just sputtered out. You guys never toured?
We really didn't. I think we maybe played one show, you know, outside the city.
Wow.
But that was it. Just never occurred to us, you know. It's okay. A weird thing.
Yeah,
it,
I know. You don't know. Happen. You don't know. That's why it's, the community's important. People ask me about the old days, and I always say it was about people. I think the new days are about people, too. But tell me what happens after Gift Horse with you and your bass.
Well, so at the same time that I was doing that, I was learning computer animation because I used to be a painter. Like, I went to college to study painting and music composition. I mean, it's not that I, like, did a whole, I didn't finish and get a degree in painting or in music, but I was just taking some classes. And while I was doing that, I was doing Gift Horse and I was working in San Francisco, and I started learning computer animation because I was interested in it. And after a while, you know, having been in San Francisco for so long, I was like, you know, I think I'm done with this place for now. I think I was really kind of ambitious and I wanted to start playing and writing songs and have my own band. And I got it in my head that I couldn't do it in San Francisco. So I decided to move to New York City. And so Gift Horse kind of went on and off a little bit, but then when that ended is when I moved to New York City in 1997.
And what's the next thing musically?
Well, before I left, I was like, before I leave this town, I'm going to make some demos of my own songs. And I had been teaching myself piano and teaching myself drums and teaching myself to sing.
Wow. Great.
And you know, all that stuff, because I couldn't find people to play with. I felt like San Francisco, while there was a really strong community, there was this sense of sort of apathetic. People didn't really push that hard. And I always had this this sort of thing about time, like the time is really valuable and that you shouldn't waste it because we don't know what's going to happen with the world and in front of us and behind us. And, you know, you got to, if you really want something,
people
you got to go after it.
They take it for granted.
They do.
And
you
think part of that, I totally agree with you, Dana. Yeah. I think part of it is the fear of what the reality is, that you only got so much time.
That's right.
So we're kind of
like
in
you,
denial.
I lost some.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
We're kind of in a denial.
Yeah. And like you experienced very young, losing somebody who was, like, really important. That happened to me first with Cliff, and then I actually had a stepsister who was like a sister who I was born and, you know, raised with basically since age two, and she was killed in a car accident when I was a teenager. And that really changed my perception of time and you know, importance of, like, going after your dreams and, you know, making the time count. And I got really serious. And that was a big part of me starting to be like, all right, I'm going to go for it. And so I moved to New York City.
I am going to be earnest. Right? Make it count. I love it. I want to play this from you. You sent me Botanica, So Far From Childhood.
Sons and daughters, here we are. so far from childhood, leaving first love behind. But the best we'll discover, the rough scales of age. Lost teeth, hair, decay are no match for a sway. That's still taught to play.
I'm going up. crashing, listen to the tempest lashing, listen to the breakers crashing, listen to the ocean sound, listen to the
Pedro Show, that chunk of music, So Far From Childhood, start off with Botanica. Then Nadja, we had Aiden Baker, another Andrea Belfi connect a few episodes ago.
His show was great.
Cuts on Your Hands. Oh, you listen?
Yeah.
Yeah, very interesting cat. Canadian, right? But a fellow Berliner like you now.
Yeah, he's a friend.
Okay. Head Boggle after that. This cat's in the city. Jay. These titles, J minus E2 plus YY minus H2. Yeah, of course. And then finally,
Bertrand Bergelot.
Okay,
French.
Maybe a German guy, yeah. Right? Ripples.
And, yeah.
Okay, so you're in New York City, and or right before that, you got all prepared by learning all these other things, and you made demos, then you go to New York City, prepared, mm-hmm. musically, yeah. And what happens?
So what happened was I was like, all right, I'm going to move to New York and I'm going to, you know, just start my new life. And I knew like two people there. and the first thing I was like, shit, I got to find work. This place is really expensive. So I found a place that did computer and I could do some computer animation. And that was really good. There was a pretty active world for that. So that wasn't really a problem. I mean, it was a transition for sure to leave, you know, San Francisco and suddenly like working in Manhattan as a freelancer in your mid-20s. I was like, shit. But it was really tough and it was good. And it, musically, so I was like, all right, I'm going to start a band. So I just started meeting people here and there through friends and I started that band Bee and Flower. And that was, that was my first. I mean, I had a band in San Francisco called Worry Dolls that was my first band that I sang in, but we didn't really do much and we weren't together that long. But I did, you know, co-write with those guys. But Bee and Flower was really my first band that I just was, you know, I wrote all the parts and I said, like, here's the demos and I found some folks to play with. And that band, Bee and Flower, actually lasted about 12 years.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's great. And there's something to learn from that, right? Some relationships.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're fucking great. Sometimes they're a causeway or a bridge. Yeah.
Totally. And actually, it's funny because Andrea Belfi plays sometimes with one of those guitar players, Lynn Wright. And that's actually how I've initially met Andrea. And Lynn was, you know, in the band from the beginning. And I'm friends with all those guys still. So it's funny stuff. Stuff definitely comes around. And so I was doing Bee and Flower, and that was tough in many ways. So I'm really proud of the records we made. And very not that long after being in New York, I also met Michael Girard, and that's how I joined that band Angels of Light, which was, you know, his project after he killed off Swans. The first time I wanted to do more quiet music, and so that's when I kind of connected with that crew, and that's also where I met Larry Mullins.
Larry!
Yeah, that's where we were in that band.
2 years of Stooges so. With him.
I know.
He told me about his Swans adventure making records with Michael and stuff, and actually they got back together a year or two ago to make another one.
Yeah.
Or a couple
I play on that. That's that Swans track I gave you for the, okay. the some new things okay. I'm playing based on.
But
that
Michael also had something called Skin, right? That was kind of calmer.
Mm-hmm. World of Skin with
that's
him and Jarbo.
Yeah. My memory again.
Yeah, no. Hey,
like I'm always hearing new bands, hearing new songs.
yeah.
So all these connects. Okay, so with Michael, you actually joined the Swans at that time?
Back then, so I was in Angels of Light for like 4
that's
years.
That's it, Angels of Light.
Mm-hmm. And Angels of Light was, you know, it changed over time, but I joined for the first tour, I guess, so that an album had been made, which I was not on, and then I guess, yeah, for the touring cycle for the first Angels album, and that was me and Michael Draw and Larry Mullins and Cassis Stout and Thor Harris.
Thor Harris, Austin. Great drummer. What kind of percussion, right, in those days with, I think, that unit? He was kind of percussion. Because Larry worked the trap set, right?
Larry at that time was playing, he was playing like a snare drum and a ride cymbal and
well,
he had a
vorcon
and he had a vibraphone. And then Christoph Hahn was in there also. I don't think Christoph Hahn was on the first tour we did, but very shortly after he lives in Berlin too. So yeah, and I played with them for a few years. And then after that, I mean, if you really want to do a big jump, Being Flower kind of disassembled in its current form in 2004, and myself and the piano player Rob Miller from Being Flower and Larry Mullins all moved to Berlin in 2004.
Okay. Yeah, I remember Larry telling me about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Larry produced the Being Flower record that came after that, that was made in Berlin.
Okay, because I was going to ask about Berlin. We're at the end of the second hour, July 9, 2021. Special guest, Dana Schechter. Hold tight for hour three. July 9, 2021. It's the third hour of the Lot for Pedro show.
We'll be right back.
For Pedro Show, start off the third hour with Gnaw and the tune Rat. you need to get them backwards. Be, well, an idiot like Watt. But that's correct. A live excerpt from gig at Scotia Bank Arena on September 27, 2019. This is Andrea Belfi. I met through El Sonido de Marinaio. He's the original drummer. And but then he's also connected with you and Larry Mullen. Oh, gosh. Well, so many Auslanders in Berlin, right? Musicians, artists. Quite a connection place. Okay. In Vuce, after that, with La Sombra out of the Netherlands, but the Chile connect. Up to No Good, Sophie du Palais. That's Netherlands, too. A brand new record. And finally, Gift Horse, right? Way back from the city and stuff. On Rush. Watt would have had it together. That would have been up there before Bee and Flower People, sorry. But maybe it's good all like brand new, mixed up like this. Okay. So in Berlin, like we had Julia Reedy on, I think, last episode, right? And she said it was really econo to move there then, because the East just, well, you went there about, yeah, maybe it still was.
When I first went, it was. Okay. It's not now, though.
Oh, no, I hear. In fact, you got to go more east, right inside the city, to find more and more econo. It ain't Kreuzbergen.
No.
Or stuff like that. Yeah, I heard it's some Chinquando now. Ain't that the way humans like doing? Like the city was like that, right? We talked about Manhattan expensive crime.
Yeah.
But, okay. You must have done a Dana Schechter band, right? Because even though there's one, Bee and Honey, do you make a band with him?
Well, Bee and Flower was.
Bee and
like,
Flower, I'm sorry.
No, it's not.
I forgot the name!
Come on, it's cool. I mean, I realize it's, you know, it's a lot of details. So Bee and Flower, you know, like, people did write their own parts as we had the band for longer, but, you know, it was sort of my trying to realize this idea that I had, you know, being a young and in San Francisco, being like, can I write songs with melodies and can I sing? Like, singing was really hard for me, and so that was my interest, was seeing, like, can I write weird chord progressions and put interesting melodies over them? That was, you know, my idea.
Can I ask you this? Do you ever compose on the bass?
Hell yeah.
Because that's my main thing. But you taught yourself piano and stuff, so you probably use those things too.
I use everything. Yeah, I mean, it just depends. Like, if sometimes I'll just be sitting there and I'll get this idea and it'll kind of a little melody or like a rhythm or a riff or just like a beat or just a thud or I don't know. It's just depending on what is available to me at the moment that happens. I'll start with that and then I'll just build on it. Cause now, you know, my main instrumentation that I really play is bass and lap steel. And so,
how'd the lap steel happen?
Well, the lap steel happened.
Do you know Fred Kilboot? Fred, the Berliner lap steel guy. Fred, I'm mispronouncing his last name like an idiot. He's been on the show a few times.
That's it. Well, I'll follow up with you on that.
How'd you get into it?
So to just kind of like we can quickly dip back to history. So I was living in Berlin for 4 years, 2004 to 2008, doing Bee and Flower there. I decided at one point, you know what, I think I need to move back to the States. So I went back to New York City and kind of restarted Bee and Flower. This was 2008. Did some tours with other bands, you know, like American Music Club and that band Botanica. And then I started.
Mark Getzel, great voice.
Yeah, he's the best. And that is, in 2011, I got this idea to really start a solo thing where I was like, it's going to be so solo that it's going to be just me. And part of this was a decision to simplify my life, to try to not, you know, get bogged down by things like scheduling and, you know, it's complicated.
More focused, less diluted.
Well, I wanted, I basically had been effectively a band, Bee and Flower, over two continents, and it was really complicated, and people's, you know, interest and availability was shifting. And they weren't always around. And, you know, I was like, man, I'm being held up here. Like, time is running out. Like, not running out, but I, come on, let's make the most of it. So I was like, I'll just start something just by myself. So I started Insect Arc, and that's when I picked up the lap steel And, you know, okay. So with that band, like, I switch instruments, vibes.
You know, it's trippy, you know, the show's coming towards the end here, and we're making a full loop, because you did Arco on that stand-up bass, and that's all legato-like, lap steel. Trippy.
Yeah, exactly. Trippy. So Insect Arc has been going now for, like, 9 years, and that's really my main thing, and in a lot of ways, it's been one of the most satisfying projects for me, because it's just totally, I feel like, kind of genreless, and I get to do that. Whatever I want.
Yeah, that's right. Let the freak flag fly. Let's listen.
Exactly.
Thank you.
last music for this edition, My True Body, Angels of Light. People, you heard the story on that. That's her helping Michael. And then Julia Reedy, who was on last episode, because she gave me so much, I couldn't fit it all in. So here's Crystal Bones. And then she's got long pieces, right? And then Insect Art, your current prod, your endeavor, In the Nest. And are you still making demos?
I do still make demos. I mean, I make demos whenever I record, you know, with other people. I mean, I work with drummers now. Because at a certain point, I just was like, I don't want to do this by myself. So I've had a couple drummers in the band. And But I oftentimes actually write drum parts, at least just to help me write the songs. Then I'll be like, all right, you can probably come up with something better than my part or not. You know, kind of work through it. But I do really elaborate demos because I consider the demos part of the composition process because I don't consider myself a guitarist. And lap steel being an open-tuned instrument, you know, I'm exploring stuff with it as I'm demoing. So, the thing kind of builds itself. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So and the thing actually develops as you put those sounds together. It's not like, oh,
totally.
I know what it's going to be, and I got to figure out everybody's parts. Like, whoa, this thing is developing because I'm sound on sound, right, layering it up.
Yep. Yeah, I have a really complicated live setup so that I can, you know, stack stuff and it doesn't drift. I have these kind of fancy looper pedals that allow me to really build up like this wall of sound with just myself. And, you know, I got some solo stuff coming up. So,
Well, you flowed me a picture where, like, you got your bass slung on your side and you're working the fucking slide.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's, you know, like you're really working both of them. I mean, not at the same time, but, you know, in there. And interesting like that. And then you got nobody to blame except yourself. Hey, where can people find you on the internet, Dana?
Well, I think the main thing to point out is, you know, that people sometimes confuse the word ark with, like, the Noah's Ark, which is fine, but it is the same spelling. But sometimes people spell it with a C, like as in like, you know, a half bend, but it is ARK. So if they find an insect arc, insectark.com, that's a pretty good place to start. Or, you know, also whatever, Facebook and Instagram, all crap.
The corporate ones probably have connects on your personal one, right? It's like having your own fanzine.
Yeah, I do maintain like a pretty, you know, simple but informative.
I'm so grateful for that because, you know, just think if you've invested all your sound stuff into my waste of space place, and that place, you know, turned into a desert.
So right.
The people, personal websites, please, like going to Kinko's and printing up your own fanzine. And so
totally.
What's up next, an Insect Dark album?
Yep, I got two albums being written right now. One is actually going to be all me, just actually mostly synthesizer stuff, no drums, maybe not even any bass. And then a band sort of album, you know, with drums and, you know, more of this sort of along the lines to the songs that, you know.
Are you going to release them simultaneous?
Not sure yet. Okay. They're not done writing yet, so, you know.
Yeah, right, it's development. But when you do get them done, either both or one or the other, will you come back on the show? We can play it and talk about it?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Bitch. Yeah. And I got a release coming up that I can't quite announce yet, but I got something coming out.
No, like Mr. Orson Welles said, no wine before it's time.
But yeah, I'm working. I'm working really hard. I tried to be really, you know, productive during the lockdown. And, you know,
thanks so much for coming on and sharing your story of your journey through music.
Thanks for having me, Mike. It's an absolute pleasure and an honor to chat with you, and I would love to come back.
Big grazie to Fratello Andrea Belfi for the connect.
Absolutely.
Yeah. People, it's been the July 9, 2021 edition of the WAP Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.